His front door was unbarred. I entered as though I had the right, and closed the door securely behind me. The starkly furnished rooms were deserted, and when I searched them I found nothing to give me any indication of his whereabouts. Tanis had obviously been gone for a long time, possibly since my mistress and I had left Karnak. The milk in a jug by the window had thickened and dried like hard cheese, and a crust of sorghum bread on the plate beside it was covered with a blue mould. As far as I could see, nothing was missing. Even the bola nutter still hung on its rack above his bed. For Tanis to have left that was extraordinary. Usually it was like an extension of his body. I hid it away carefully in a secret compartment below his sleeping place, which I had built for him when first he had moved into these lodgings. I wished to avoid moving around the city in daylight, so I remained in Tanis' rooms for the rest of that afternoon, occupying myself with cleaning up the dust and filth that had accumulated. At nightfall I slipped out and went down to the riverside. I saw immediately that the Breath of Horus was at her moorings. She had obviously been in action since last I had seen her, and had suffered battle damage. Her bows were shattered, and her timbers amidships had been scorched and charred. I noted with a stir of proprietary pride that Tanis had made the modifications to her hull that I had designed. The gilded metal horn protruded from her bows just above the waterline. From its battered condition I surmised that it had done fierce execution amongst the fleets of the Red Pretender. However, I could see that neither Tanis nor Kratos was on deck. A junior officer whom I recognized had the watch, but I discarded the idea of hailing him and instead set out to tour the sailors' haunts around the area of the docks. It says a great deal for the morals and the sanctity of the priests of Osiris that I was welcomed in the dives and whorehouses like an habitué. In one of the more respectable taverns I recognized the impressive figure of Kratos. He was drinking and playing at dice with a group of his brother officers. I made no move to approach him, but I watched him across the crowded room. Meanwhile I fended off the advances of a succession of pleasure birds of both sexes who were progressively lowering their tariffs in their efforts to tempt me out into the dark alleyway to sample their well-displayed charms. None of them were in the least deterred by my priestly collar of blue glass beads. When Kratos at last gave his companions a hearty good night and made his way out into the alley, I followed his tall figure with relief. "What is it you want from me now, beloved of the gods?" he growled at me with scorn when I hurried up beside him. "Is it my gold or my bum-splitter you crave?" Many of the priests had taken enthusiastically to this modern vogue for pederasty. "I'll take the gold," I told him. "You have more of that than the other, Kratos." He stopped dead in his tracks and stared at me suspiciously. His bluff and handsome features were only a little flushed and befuddled by liquor. "How do you know my name?" He seized me by the shoulder and dragged me into a lighted doorway and studied my face. At last he snatched the wig from off my head. "By the piles between Seth's buttocks, it's you, Taita!" he roared. "I'd be obliged if you'd refrain from shouting out my name to all the world," I told him, and he turned serious at once. "Come, we'll go to my rooms." Once we were alone, he poured two mugs of beer. "Haven't you had enough of that?" I asked, and he grinned at me. "We'll only know the answer to that in the morning. How now, Taita? Don't be too strict with me. We have been downriver raiding the Red Usurper's fleet for the past 3 weeks. Sweet happy, but that bow horn of yours works wonders. We cut up nearly 20 of his galleys, and we chopped the heads off a couple of hundreds of his rascals. Although it was thirsty work, not a drop of anything stronger than water has passed my lips in all that time. Don't begrudge me a mouthful of beer now. Drink with me." He raised his mug, and I was also thirsty. I saluted him in return, but as I put the mug down again I asked, "Where is Tanis?" He sobered instantly. "Tanis has disappeared," he said, and I stared at him. "Disappeared? What do you mean, disappeared? Did he not lead the raid downriver?" Kratos shook his head. "Nope, he's gone, vanished. I have had my men scour every street and every house in all of Thebes. There is no sign of him. I tell you, Taita, I am worried, really worried." "When did you last see him?"
2 days after the royal wedding, after the Lady Lostris married the king, on the evening of the day that you sailed with the royal flotilla for Elephantine. I tried to talk some sense into his thick head, but he would not listen."
"What did he say?"
He handed over the command of the Breath of Horus and the entire squadron to me.
He could not do that, surely?
Yes, he could. He used the authority of Pharaoh's hawk seal.
I nodded.
And then what did he do?
I've just told you.
He disappeared.
I sipped at the mug of beer as I tried to think it out. Meanwhile, Kratos went to the window and urinated through it. It splashed noisily into the street below, and I heard a startled passer-by shout up at him, "Careful where you spray, you filthy pig!"
Kratos leaned out and quite cheerfully offered to crack his skull for him, and the man's grumblings receded rapidly. Chortling with the small victory, Kratos came back to me, and I asked, "What mood was Thanos in when he left you?"
Kratos turned serious again.
"The blackest and most ugly temper I've ever witnessed. He cursed the gods and Pharaoh. He even cursed the Lady Lostris and called her a royal whore."
I winced to hear it. Yet I knew that this was not my Thanos speaking. It was the voice of despairing and hopeless love.
He said that Pharaoh could carry out his threat to have him strangled for sedition, and he would welcome the release. No, he was in terrible straits, and there was nothing that I could do or say to comfort him.
That was all?
He gave you no hint as to what he intended? Kratos shook his head and refilled his beer mug.
What happened to the hawk seal? I asked.
He left it with me. He said he had no further use for it. I have it safe aboard the Breath of Horus.
What of the other arrangements that I discussed with you? Have you done what I asked?
He looked into his mug guiltily and muttered, I began to make the arrangements, but after Thanos was gone, there seemed no point to it. Besides, I have been busy downriver since then.
It is not like you, Kratos, to be so unreliable.
I had found that with Kratos, hurt, disappointment was more effective than anger.
My Lady Lostris was relying on you. She told me that she trusted you completely.
Kratos is a great rock of strength. Those were her exact words.
I could see that it was working yet again, for Kratos is also one of my mistress's ardent admirers. Even a hint of her displeasure would move him.
Damn you, Taita, you make me sound like a weak-kneed idiot.
I kept silent, but silence can be more irksome than words.
What in the name of Horus does the Lady Lostris want me to do?
Nothing more than I asked you to do before I left for Elephantine, I told him, and he slammed down his mug.
I am a soldier. I cannot leave my duties and take half the squadron to go off on some mad adventure. It was one thing when Thanos had the hawk seal.
You have the hawk seal now, I told him softly.
He stared at me.
I cannot use it without Thanos.
You are his lieutenant. Thanos gave you the hawk seal to use. You know what to do with it. Do it.
I will find Thanos and bring him back, but you must be ready by then. There is desperate and bloody work ahead, and Thanos needs you. Don't let him down. Not again.
He flushed with anger at the jibe.
I'll make you swallow those words, he promised.
And that will be the finest meal you could set for me, I told him.
I love brave and honest men. They're so easily manipulated.
I was uncertain as to how I would make good my promise to find Thanos, but I left Kratos to sleep off his debauch, and I went out into the town again to try. Once more I made the rounds of every one of his old haunts and questioned anyone who could possibly have seen him. I had no illusions as to the risk I was taking in pursuing my inquiries about Thanos, or as to just how flimsy was my disguise if I should run into anybody who knew me well. But I had to find him. I kept going through the night, until even the shebeens and whorehouses along the waterfront had thrown out the last drunken customers and doused their lamps. As the dawn broke over the river, I stood tired and disconsolate on the bank of the Nile, and tried to think if there was some possibility I'd overlooked. A wild honking cry made me look up. High above me, a straggling skein of Egyptian geese was outlined against the pale gold and coppery tones of the eastern sky. Immediately they brought to my mind those happy days that the three of us, Thanos and the Lady Lostris and myself, had spent wildfowling in the swamps.
Fool, I reviled myself. Of course, that's it.
By this time, the alleyways of the souk were filled with a noisy, jostling crowd. Thebes is the busiest city in the world. No man is idle here. They blow glass and work gold and silver. They weave flax and throw pots. The merchant deals and haggles, the lawyer cants, the priest chants, and the whore swives. It is an exciting, flamboyant city, and I love it. I forced my way through the throng and the hubbub of banter and bargaining as the merchants and the farmers displayed their wares for the housewives and the bailiffs of the rich households. The souk stank fulsomely of spices and fruits, of vegetables and fish and meats, some of which were far from fresh. Cattle bellowed and goats bleated and added their dung to the human contribution of excrement that trickled down the open gutters towards old Mother Nile. I thought of buying an ass, for it would be a long walk in this hottest season of the year, and there were some sturdy beasts on offer. In the end, I decided against such extravagance, not only on the grounds of economy, for I knew that once I was out in the open countryside, an expensive animal would certainly attract the attention of the shrikes. For such a prize, they might overcome their religious scruples. Instead, I purchased only a few handfuls of dates and a loaf of bread, a leather bag to carry these provisions, and a gourd water bottle. Then I set out through the narrow streets for the main gate of the city. I had not reached the gates when there was a commotion in the street ahead of me, and a detachment of the palace guards came towards me, using their staves to force a passage through the market crowds. Close behind them, a half-dozen slaves carried an ornate and curtained litter at a jog-trot. I was trapped against the clay-daub walls of one of the buildings, and though I recognized both the litter and the commander of the bodyguards, I could not avoid a confrontation. Panic seized me. I might survive a casual scrutiny from Rasfer, but I was certain that even under my disguise, my Lord Intef would know me instantly. Standing beside me was an old slave woman with breasts like two great amphorae of olive oil and a backside like a hippopotamus's. I wriggled sideways until her bulk hid me. Then I settled my wig over my eyes and peeped out from behind her. Despite my fears, I felt a tingle of professional pride that Rasfer was on his feet again so soon after my surgery. He led his troop of bodyguards towards where I hid, but it was only when he drew almost level that I noticed that one side of his face had collapsed. It was as though his unlovely features had been modelled in wax and then held close to a naked flame. This condition is often the consequence of even the most skilful trepanning. The other half of his face was set in its customary scowl. If Rasfer had been hideous before, now he should cause the children to cry and their elders to make the sign against the evil eye when they looked upon him. He passed close to where I stood, and the litter followed him. Through a chink in the embroidered curtains I caught a glimpse of Lord Intef as he sprawled elegantly on pillows of pure silk imported from the East that must have cost at least 5 gold rings each. His cheeks were freshly shaved, and his hair was dressed in formal ringlets. On top of his coiffure was set a cone of perfumed beeswax that would melt in the heat and trickle over his scalp and down his neck to cool and soothe his skin. One hand, the fingers stiff with jeweled rings, lay languidly on the smooth brown thigh of a pretty little slave boy who must have been a recent addition to his collection, for I did not recognize him. I was taken off guard by the strength of my own hatred, as I looked at my old master. All the countless injuries and humiliations that I had suffered at his hands rushed back to torment me, and these were aggravated by his most recent outrage. By sending the cobra to me, he had endangered the life of my mistress. If I had been able to forgive all else, I would never be able to forgive him that. He began to turn his head in my direction, but before our eyes could meet, I sank down behind the mountainous woman in front of me. The litter was borne away down the narrow alley, and as I stared after it, I found that I was trembling, just as I had after my struggle with the cobra. Divine Horus, hear this plea. Grant me no rest until he is dead and gone to his master Seth, I whispered. And I pushed my way on towards the city gate.